Welcome to the Strong Girl Podcast, a podcast for and about strong women and how they overcame the things that once made them feel weak. Join me, your host, Samantha Russo, as I discuss everything from mindset to physical health with guests that will surely inspire and motivate you. There will be laughs, there will be tears, and maybe a few F-bombs, but more importantly, lessons to learn to help you grow and embrace your strong girl. Welcome back to another episode of the Strong Girl Podcast. Today, I am interviewing one of my friends that I met through pageants, weirdly enough. Her name is Taylor Higgins. She's from Wilmington, Massachusetts, and most recently, she's known as the author of the best-selling nonfiction novel, Between the Stitching. It's her version of a modern-day love story. Monday through Friday, she's a sales executive for a luxury cooking and coffee technology company, and in her spare time, she focuses on writing as she plans to launch a second book in summer of 2019. So coming up, Taylor's also a former NHL Boston Bruins Ice Girl and Miss Teen Massachusetts US. And like I said, we actually met through pageants. And I honestly think like the first time we met in person was after being like friends on Instagram and Facebook for so long that it was just like we saw each other in a dress store and it was just like, oh yeah, we're friends. Like it wasn't weird at all.
Yeah, we had this long relationship, and I was like, there's Sam Russo, she's competing for Miss New Hampshire, and that's I have to go take a look, and I felt like I knew you, but I didn't know you, but I just had that connection with you,
because that's know.
Just kind of the connection you put into the air.
So funny. So also a few things. First of all, I didn't know you were from Wilmington. Like, my mom's whole side of the family is from Wilmington, and a lot of them still live there, so maybe we can chat and see if you've heard any crazy stories about my family.
Oh my god, yeah.
And even smaller world, I had done a photo shoot with one of our mutual friends, a photographer, way back in 2013, and I was wearing a Red Sox shirt, and he was like, my friend is dating a Red Sox player. And I was like, no way. I was like, who? He was like, he's a big time prospect, like da da da. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And like, come to find out, like, when I found out you were writing this book, I was like, holy crap, that is the weirdest thing. And I don't know why I like vividly remember having that conversation, but I was like, holy crap, like, that is so weird.
It is weird. That's so weird.
Okay, so let's kind of get this started. Let's start from the beginning, actually. Can you kind of describe, you know, your life and the type of girl you were before meeting Skylar?
So I was, right before I met Skylar, it was actually, I was just getting into pageants for the very first time. I was around business. I was trying on a dress at a dress store, and the store manager was like, you should compete in a pageant. And I'm like, no. And then 2 months later, long story short, I competed at the Teen Mass US and I won. And I was like on top of the world. I had just graduated high school a year ahead of my class. I was just so excited and confident. And I was going in July and going to nationals. And I was just in such a good place. And then fast forward to about June, I was at an event in Portland, Maine, where Skylar played baseball for the Portland Sea Dogs. And we met in passing at an event, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, but we really formally met on social media, how all relationships are formed today, but that's how we kind of connected and talked, and from there, it grew into this whole love story, but that's really where it all began.
And what was it like, you know, in the beginning to be dating a baseball player, and also somebody that is affiliated with the hometown team, the Red Sox?
It was awesome because it's so close to home. Like, this is the Red Sox. You know, you always think, like, what if he made it? I really am not a baseball fan, and I wasn't at the time, but just to think that he could be playing on my home turf, it was just really a cool and exciting thing. Dating a baseball player sounds like it would be great, but minor league baseball is so different than major league baseball, and he was stuck in the minors, very much so, in double A baseball. You're traveling a lot. He has, like, they have games every single day, 7 days a week. He has, like, 13-hour days at the field, so if you are with him, you don't see him, really, and he's just always gone, and it's a grind. It really is, and that's something else I'd like to bring awareness to, is how underpaid and how minor league baseball players are treated, because it's sad. They work really hard, and it's the future of baseball, essentially, but they don't get much for it, and it's sad. It's a tough, tough life.
Yeah, so I was actually just talking to my boyfriend about this recently because, you know, I worked in AA baseball here in New Hampshire, and it really blew my mind. There is nothing else. There's no other, like, major league sport like this, where there are so many different levels of the minor leagues. And we were talking about it, and it was some kind of just like we came to this realization that a lot of these guys, they will stay in the minor leagues for so, so long, pursuing the dream, grinding every day. And they're essentially like those football, like target practice, like for tackling practice. Like if you're in the minors until you're like, you know, 30, that's essentially what you are.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And they stay, though, because, one, they need teams. So it's funny, actually. The people on Skylar's AA baseball team are actually, and actually the characters in my book, they are all the current roster players that just won the World Series for the Red Sox. So I am very familiar with the wives and girlfriends and the actual players on the team. He just loved Skylar, just was not one of those lucky ones that made it. He was not a prospect. He was not paid millions of dollars for the sport. So he maybe made like $6,000 a season. He just lived in poverty, basically. And it's just sad that he didn't make it. But it's you can see what happens when you can't make it. But yeah, it's a sad, sad life.
So I read your book, obviously. I got it as soon as you released it, and I actually had a really hard time watching the World Series and baseball in general this year after reading your book, because like I said, I did work in minor league baseball here in Manchester, so we weren't affiliated with the Red Sox. We're a different team, and although I definitely saw the way that those guys acted, it wasn't like my team, so I had like such a hard time watching and enjoying baseball this season because I was like, ooh, I'm just trying to pick out which one was, you know, so-and-so in your book. I was like, oh my God. Enjoy watching baseball at all, or has it kind of left a sour taste in your mouth?
When my dad has it on TV, I don't sit down and like, I need to watch the Red Sox tonight, but my dad, if I'm passing, I see him watching it, or I sit on TV, I see a face, and I instantly just, it brings me back to a moment in time where I know what one of those people have done, and it just takes me to another place. I don't even think about baseball. I see them for the actions that they've, like, committed in the past, and it just spoils it for me. The sport is just totally spoiled for me. I look at them as people that almost don't deserve what they got, and it was really hard for me to almost be happy for them in the World Series, but it's like, at the same time, it's a wonderful accomplishment, and I wouldn't want anyone to not have that, but I just know that there's so much that other people don't know on the other side of baseball, and that's the unfortunate part. Like, these are the people that the children look up to. They're like superheroes to so many people, but are they good people? Like, are they?
Yeah. So, okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your relationship. When was the first time you kind of suspected that maybe he wasn't the person that you thought he was?
So all was really well. We dated. We had, like, the best summer of our life. I met him in June. We had a great summer. He finished up his season in AA. And then at the end of the season, he's from Georgia, and he asked me to move to Georgia with him. And I, being just young and adventurous, said, of course, we'll do what we can to make this work. He never saw his family, so I took it as, like, my duty to make the move. So I did. Moved to Georgia. Not long after I moved my entire world down there, I got a Facebook message from one of his ex-girlfriends. And she told me that he reached out to her once we both returned to Georgia, and he was asking to see her. I confronted him about it, and he threw himself on the floor. Like, this guy, he's like, if you met him, he's very kind, put together, very handsome. Like, you just wouldn't suspect this. And then when I confronted him about something that he supposedly had done, he just lost it. Like, he was collapsing on the floor. He was crying. He was, like, in fetal position. I go into great detail in my book about this confrontation, and it was shocking to me. I just didn't think a man would handle something like this, and it was sketchy to me that he couldn't just be like, this either happened or it didn't, but he went through all these charades, like this whole performance, and that was really where it started. I started to see that he cried a lot, and that he just totally broke down with confrontation. Like, confrontation was not an option for him, and that's where my first red flag is, and that's probably where I should have passed my bags, but I was just too hopeful to leave at that moment.
Yeah, and his family, like, you guys need to read this book, because his family, I was like, these people there's no way they're real, but I obviously, so many of the stories, the whole book, like, really is chock full of stories of, like, you wouldn't even believe, and stories of abuse. Can you kind of give the listeners some sort of understanding what you went through with Skylar? Like, how long was this relationship?
It was over the course of 2 years, and it was just a roller coaster. Like, you think you know roller coaster relationships, but he was so hot and cold, and you never knew when he was going to set off. He, like, upon meeting him today, even, he would appear to be, he's soft-spoken, he's really shy, not much of a conversationalist, but he would just snap, and, like, little things would set him off, and I just didn't know what would. It could be anything from wearing too much makeup, or my hair is too blonde, or I'm going to the gym because I want to get in shape for other men. Like, he had something to say about absolutely everything, and he would just make such a big deal out of everything, and he would just annihilate your entire day with the smallest issue, and it would just linger. It would never go away. And then all of a sudden, when he decided he wanted to be okay again, he would be okay, and everything was good, and I'd be, like, walking on eggshells. I was like, oh, okay, we're good now? Oh, okay, well, we're good now, okay. And then something else would come up, and it just, again, up in flames. It was just like there was no rhyme or reason for it. I didn't know when it was coming, and it was so abusive, and it just took, I guess, writing it to see what I went through and how abusive that actually was.
Yeah, and what was the hardest story to share in the book?
You know, I think I cried a lot through the book. I mean, just writing some of the stories about the abuse. There's a lot of abuse in the book, such as emotional abuse, physical abuse, and then he struggles with alcohol abuse, and then substance abuse, and then certainly crazy, crazy sexual abuse. But I think the hardest part for me was kind of the ending, like our personal ending in the book when I finally decided to leave. That was really emotional for me. But especially in the very end of my book, I write to him if I could speak to him today, if I could speak to him as the Taylor that I am today. And that, it still gets me for some reason, just talking to him, knowing that I had to make him a stranger because he just couldn't love me the way that I wanted him to or needed him to. And it's sad to me. It still makes me emotional if I read it. Every time I reread it, it's just like it never gets easier.
Yeah.
And it's just like kind of that final goodbye. The door is finally closed. And I think publishing the book was like the ending because I kept the relationship very much alive through writing this. It felt like he was still in my life while I was writing it. But then when it was finally published and I had nothing else to do with the book, it was like, oh, it's gone. He's done. And that's that.
Yeah, wow. So did anyone know the extent of what was going on in your relationship, or was this really all kept under wraps?
He made me really just like a recluse. Like, he sheltered me from society. He didn't want me to have anything to do with friends, and I lost a lot of friends because I just stopped reaching out. Like, no one's going to invite me to do things if I'm always failing or I'm just always saying no. So I lost connection with a lot of people, and he spent a lot of time with my family, so I didn't have the friends to reach out to, and I didn't want to make waves with my family because that would just, he's at my house and he's not welcome, that's not going to work. So I really kept it to myself. I had nowhere to turn. Occasionally I would call like one friend that would listen, and she would just tell me to leave. I would tell my mom, if my mom like caught me crying, I would just say, you know, we had an argument. I could never be fully truthful what was going on, and I kept a lot of it in for so long, and the only outlet that I really had was the writing, and I would just write these little things down. We'll get into that more when I tell you about how I started the writing process and all of that, but it was really just me and my writing. That was the only person I could vent to, or thing to vent to, rather.
Ugh. And so to give our listeners like an understanding, this really isn't like a one relationship in the minor leagues thing. Like, this is very, very prevalent. Can you talk about the life of a baseball wag, as they call them, and what that means?
It means simply that you're on your own. So you're in a relationship with someone that pretty much doesn't exist. He's gone. They are on the road every other week. Like I said, they have like 13-hour days, so you're always alone. You rely heavily on the other wags as friends, as like support systems, and you really do build this amazing sisterhood. It's similar to the sisterhood you develop in pageantry. So for any of you in pageants, you might be able to relate with that, but it's a strong bond. I receive Christmas cards from wags. I still send birthday gifts and presents to wags and their children. So you really just have this, like, connection. I've been invited to weddings even after not being with Skylar, so it's just this crazy bond. But people think that it's, like, luxurious and that you get to just travel and you're going to these, like, tiny cities and not nice areas, and that's about the extent of the traveling that you're doing, and there's no money, there's nothing luxurious about it. It's not a pretty lifestyle, and you're just seeing this ugly side of baseball that people don't know about. It's a business. It's simply a business. And that's it. They don't really care about your well-being or you as a person or the friendships and goals or any of that. It's just who is good and who is producing at this very moment, and that's that.
Okay, so your relationship with Skylar was about 2 years, and that's kind of shocking to me. Maybe I just missed that in the book, but this felt like there was so much that happened that this had to be like a 5-year-long relationship. Like, there is so much for that to all happen in 2 years is like a lot,
isn't it? But like, he started right from the very beginning. He was like, I mean, I think 2 weeks in, he was like, I can see my life with you, I want to be with you, I can marry you. And I was so young, and I'm like, oh my god, this was like, it was a whirlwind, but it was exciting. And I still would say we have soulmate qualities, and what we shared together when it was good was amazing, and like, that is what you look for in a soulmate, and that doesn't come around. But we started off so hot and quickly, and it just felt like it was going to marriage and whatever, and so quickly, it was so fast, you couldn't even keep up with it. And I think that's why there was just a lot of passion and a lot of things happening so quickly, that we were able to go through all of those things together and see all of those things in essentially a small period of time. But to me at the time, felt like years. It probably took years off my life.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. And how many times do you think, like, you guys ended things and got back together? And so I would say that I was in a pretty emotionally abusive relationship with someone who I think is definitely a narcissist. And it's hard to explain why you go back. Do you have an explanation for why you wanted to make it work so badly, why you would keep going back?
The thing is, like, he would present me with all of these reasons to leave, and I was like, yeah, I'm done, this is it, and I never fully said goodbye. First of all, I'm, like, terrible at goodbyes. I will avoid them at all costs if I can. I'm, like, a weakling when it comes to that, but I just could never get myself to 100% remove myself from his life, and I don't know that you can explain to anyone that hasn't been in a narcissistic or emotionally abusive relationship why you can't just leave. Everyone's like, just leave him. That's the best advice that people offer, and I just disagree with that, because it's not that easy. You just can't leave. I don't know if it's a combination of, like, they made you feel so weak that you can't stand on your own, or you are just tired and you don't want to deal with it, or you just aren't ready to deal with the physical absence of that person yet, because then you have to think about them moving on, and you're just not ready. There's so many, and then you're like, well, he's good when he's good. Maybe I can fix him. Maybe we can work this out. There's always that hope. It's just sick, and, like, it's just a cycle that you can't leave, and until they beat you to a pulp emotionally, or maybe physically too, but mostly emotionally, until you're just so exhausted that you finally leave. But it's not something that you can just, I just stayed through it, and I just did it, and I never left when I was supposed to.
Yeah. And so social media actually played, like, a huge role in the book. Can you talk about the feeling of having to portray a certain, you know, a certain lifestyle or a certain emotion through your personal social media? And can you also kind of talk about how Skylar used social media?
So I would use social media to share with the world that we were, like, I had this great relationship. I was doing so well. You know, I was still Miss Teen Massachusetts at the time, so I had, like, all these duties to attend to, and I had people that looked up to me, and I was really trying to use that platform to just improve other people's lives and just share what I thought, like, this great love that I thought I found with the world. And I thought it was so cool that I was seeing the other side of baseball, and I was just putting it out there that I was happy and in love, even when I really wasn't sometimes. But Skylar would just use social media as basically a dating app. He just used it to his benefit to get women and whatever else he could. He didn't use it necessarily for anything else. And at times I didn't even know that he had social media. He actually asked me to delete mine, and at one point I did, and he deleted his, and didn't have social media because of the lack of trust, and he was just making fake names and profiles on all of these apps and dating sites and whatever else, and he was going by false names, and actually had people confront me saying, I think I've seen your boyfriend, but he's using a fake name, so it's just a confusing and strange time. Totally abused social media and abused the, I guess, the love that I gave to him at the same time.
It's so crazy how I, when you talked about him using Twitter, that was something that I experienced a lot when I worked for the baseball team, is getting direct messages from players on Twitter. Like, Twitter is their jam. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. It's so bizarre. Yep.
I think it's because, like, all of the newscasters, they use it so frequently, so it's, like, their little forum, and then it's just maybe not as popular as Instagram or Facebook. I still get messages from athletes, like his teammates and some current roster Red Sox players. They still message me, and they still, I'm like, I want a book about this. Like, can you not? And then and people were concerned that they would be in it, and I just, I like, to this day, like, this past week, I received a message. Like, it just doesn't end. Like, they don't get it. It's a lonely sport. You spend a lot of time alone, a lot of time away from family and friends, but they just never learn, I guess.
Okay, let's talk about more about the book writing process, and how did you decide that you were going to write a book about this, and why did you think, you know, why do you think it's a good topic for a book?
So I, like I said, when I was going through everything, I didn't have anyone really to talk to, so I would write. Like, he would make me cry, and he was able to convince me that certain things that were happening didn't even happen. He was a great, he was just a smooth talker. Like, he could tell you that, and he could convince you, and he'd be like, oh, wait a minute. So I began, sadly, documenting everything that occurred, so I would never forget. If I couldn't get a screenshot of it, I would just either, like, write on a notebook paper, or write, like, poems, and just, like, chicken scratch, basically. Just, like, so I would remember, so I knew that I wasn't insane, and that he couldn't convince me otherwise. And then over time, I just kept documenting and kind of a journaling, rather, what was going on. And then it was when we finally broke up, and then people were like, oh my god, what happened? You guys look so happy online. What you guys were, like, perfect for each other. And I began telling more and more people what had happened and what he was really about. And they were like, wait, that happened to me too. I actually have gone through similar experiences with relationships. Mm-hmm. And I was bringing others to tears, like strangers to tears, about, like, when I was telling my story. So I was like, no one is talking about this. This is so common today because of social media. Dating is so hard today. I'm like, I need to share my story. This book will hit home for so many people.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even if people can't completely relate to the extent of dating an athlete, a professional athlete, like, there are so many points in this book where I was like, it made me so angry because I was like, oh, I felt that before. Or I was so sad because I was like, yes, like, I'm not alone in having felt this. It's a really, really, really powerful book. And I love the way that it's written, because it is kind of like I'm sitting down with you and you're telling me this story. Like, I can totally hear your voice throughout it all. Like, it has funny moments. You're, like, very sarcastic. And I just love the whole tone of it.
That's one thing that I've actually, a lot of people have said. They're like, I can hear you saying this. And I try to use comic relief because it's really dark. And I am sarcastic. And I think being relatable is the most, like, it's just, being relatable is the most important thing in the world. Like, if you can relate with someone, then you can heal them, and you can do so, like, the power of relation is crazy, and that's the whole point of the book, is just healing through relation, and being so uncomfortably raw with my truth, and that other people will open up and do the exact same, because we need this. Like, we need people to talk and to heal. Like, our world is, like, we need this.
Absolutely. And what was the whole book writing process like? Have you ever, like, did you know what you were doing? Like, did you work with someone?
No, I was, like, a one-man show. I wasn't working with anyone. I turned my little notes on notebook paper. I used my MacBook. I just opened up some, like a notes page in my MacBook, and I just started writing. I was like, I'm going to write the book, and then I'll figure out what I'm going to do with it after. And then I found a self-publishing method through Amazon. That's how I self-published, so I'm completely on my own. I didn't go through an agency. I did this all alone. I edited the whole book myself as well. So it was really a one-man show. I designed the cover. I decided what the cover was going to look like. I hired a photographer. We executed that whole thing. And it was a long process with a lot of stop signs. And I had to reroute a lot. And I learned a lot about myself through that process, because it took so long. It took me like 3 years. I started writing the book when I was 19. I'm 23 now, but it took me about 3 years to write it, and I never saw the end. I was like, this book is never going to get published, and then finally it was here, and it was just like the best thing ever. But it was all my doing, and I'm really proud of that.
Oh, that's so amazing. Wow, that's super inspirational. Like, if you want to do something, there is a way to do it. Just keep your blinders on, do your thing. That's amazing. I didn't know that this was like 100% you.
Because it's like life gets in the way too. Like, you still have to, like, writing is awesome and that's a great passion, but I struggled with the fact that, like, it doesn't pay you. So you can spend 8 hours a day writing or however long it takes, but you're not earning any money for that. So it's really hard to find that balance between, like, I have to realistically make money, but I also have a passion for this, and I think this could be maybe a career for me someday. But so it was like I was struggling so hard, and I, like, the balance of I didn't have time, and then life gets in the way, and you want to have a social life, and all of the above, and it was just such a hard thing to balance. But then once I figured it out, it's like, wait, I can do this, and I can write more books. And I've been asked so many times by people, like, please do not ever stop writing.
Yes.
We need to hear more from you. And I plan to do that, because this is like my niche, and I found my passion, and nothing excites me more than writing. So I plan on continuing to write.
Yay, that's so exciting. What have you learned? What, I guess, is one major takeaway that you've learned from that relationship and also sharing your experience through the book?
That's a good one. That's a tricky one. There's so many lessons, I guess. But I guess just believe in the strength that you have. Like, you never know how strong you are until someone tests that. Look for a lesson in absolutely everything. Like, if you're in pain right now, just find a lesson. Like, look for a reason. Like, see, why is this happening, and what can I do to change this? If you know you don't want your life to look a certain way, then ask yourself what you can do to change it, because you can literally do anything, and you can leave any situation. And if someone isn't good for you, if you're in an unhealthy relationship, like, there's always a way out. And I hope that my book is an outlet for people that are having a hard time. I've actually stopped people from walking down the aisle this past summer after they read my book. One girl canceled her wedding. There's just been so many crazy instances. One woman left her husband in the middle of the night with the kids. Like, she's like, this book gave me a voice. I've had people that keep rereading this book. So I know that there's power in the story. And so just speak your truth and share your message with the world.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it today too, and I don't want to say, like, oh, this happened to you because you needed to share this experience and you needed to help other people get through this experience and heal. But I mean, to look for a lesson in every situation that you're presented with in life, and being able to, you know, make something positive out of it. I think that's a huge, huge thing for you.
Yeah, because we can go one way or the other. Like, you can sit and let this defeat you, and for a while I did, and that's fine. You have to take time for yourself and let yourself deal with that emotion. And I was very lost for a long time, and I hit rock bottom. I thought I hit my rock bottom, but then I kept hitting it, and I'm like, when is actual rock bottom? But, you just have to just heal and take your time, but know how to get back up off your feet and just keep on going.
Yeah. Have you heard from Skylar since releasing this book, or his family?
I have not heard directly from Skylar. He recently friended me on Facebook. I posted that on Instagram just because I thought it was funny.
Like, what?
But I have, I don't know, so random. He's married, newly divorced, actually, as of this week. People still update me.
Oh, my God.
But I made some friends in Georgia during my time there. I still had, like, some of his family members reached out to me. Oh, and yes, his family members that reached out to me, they were like, you could not have described his family or him more accurately. Like, it was perfect. And I'm like, okay, thank you. So it's great. And I haven't heard directly from him, but I do know that I have heard people really find that they all know about it, obviously. They have no interest in reading it. His mom was angry at me because I gave her an ugly name in the book. That's all I've heard about it. But, you know, honestly, if someone wrote a book about my son, I would read it, but maybe they just don't have the courage to admit that they read it. But I'd want to know what's going on. But she's also one of those mothers that just think that her kid can do no wrong. Everyone else is calm, so who knows?
Okay, as we kind of wrap this up, I want people to know how they can connect with you, how they can buy the book, because honestly, this is such a good gift for any of your girlfriends or even yourself, like, for the holidays.
Yeah, so the book is currently only available on Amazon. You can just look it up. It's called Between the Stitching. If you follow me on Instagram, @TayHiggins_, the link is in my bio, just for easy access. If you're listening to this and you need someone to talk to, or just a voice that, or an ear that will listen, rather, feel free to reach out. I answer every single one of my DMs. If it wasn't for everyone that read my book, it just wouldn't have had the success and, you know, the noise around it that it sort of did. So I thank each and every one of you that have listened to this podcast and that have read my book and that have reached out to me, because it just means the world to me. So definitely connect and reach out if you would like to.
Thank you so much. That is such an amazing offer. Thank you so much for being a guest. And I'm so excited to share this story with the world. I think so many people, so many women are going to connect with it. And I hope that they buy your book because it is so good.
Thank you. You're amazing. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad we did this. And I'm so glad that Paragens actually brought us together through this.
Thank you so much for joining me and Taylor on another episode of the Strong Girl Podcast. I really hope this episode, you know, provided some sort of hope and strength for anyone that is currently going through or dealing with an abusive relationship, or I hope it brings some sort of comfort to you if you've ever gone through a lot of the things that Taylor was talking about, emotionally abusive, just these awful relationships, just letting you know that, you know, you are not alone and you do have the power, you do have the strength to get out of those relationships and start living the life you are meant to live. If you need anyone to talk to, Taylor gave out her information. I will definitely be sure to link all of her information in the show notes. And also, please reach out to professionals. Get professional help if you need it. There is no shame in that whatsoever. Again, thank you so much for joining us on the Strong Girl Podcast. The only way to help make sure this podcast grows and make sure that it gets into the earbuds of the people that need it is for you to share it. Share it all over social media. Feel free to tag me on your Instagram stories @SamanthaLRusso. Tag Taylor as well. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening, her book, Between the Stitching, is available on Amazon. And let me tell you, it will make the perfect gift for anyone. It's a really quick read. I mean, I think it's over 300 pages, but I'm telling you, this is so dramatic that you will not be able to put it down and you won't be able to believe that it's real. But guys, it's real. It's so good. Support Taylor. Support small local businesses this holiday season. And I will see you again next Tuesday for the Strong Girl Podcast.